It's only entertainment.
Welcome back to the Talking Hedge. I'm Josh Kincaid, capital markets analyst and host of your cannabis business podcast.
Welcome to the Green Rush, the business of cannabis. Green Rush is a two-hour weekly live cannabis business talk show produced by Pro Cannabis Media every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard. This show discusses news in the cannabis market and each week conducts a deeper dive into specific topics of the industry. Today, substitute hosts are myself, Rick Thompson, and Josh Kincaid. Josh, welcome.
Thanks, Rick.
We have some fantastic guests joining us in studio or joining us on camera today, including Morgan Fox, who's already on the broadcast. Morgan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
You know, Morgan, you are currently political director for Normal, but you have held many different offices in this particular industry. Can you explain some of your history since starting in advocacy here?
I mean, how I really got into this was because of getting busted for cannabis. And, you know, while that would be, you know, annoying enough as it was, and, you know, dealing with all the collateral consequences of that, like not being able to get student loans, having it affect my, you know, housing and employment issues. The thing that really struck out to me was when I was in court, dudes that did not look like me were getting much harsher sentences for the exact same things that I was getting busted for. And I just, it rubbed me the wrong way. And so I started getting more involved in, you know, the issue. And when I got out of college, I got an internship at Marijuana Policy Project that turned into a full-time job that I kept for the next 10 years. And then after MPP, I moved on to National Cannabis Industry Association for about 4 years, got a little taste of the industry life. And then this January moved over to Normal. And honestly, it's been a trip. You know, I've traditionally been involved in communications. And so that's, you know, a lot of it, you know, it's still very much involved in like figuring out policy strategy and things like that. I mean, it's all like part and parcel. Working at Normal, I've had a chance to really get into the nitty gritty of like federal lobbying, and man, it is wild.
You know, Josh, could you tell us a little about your background in advocacy and cannabis as it relates to our show today?
You know, my advocacy is just myself standing on a pedestal. I really kind of haven't really come at it from an advocate's standpoint, but for me, I'm a broken individual. I was an athlete. I thought in high school, people that smoked pot were lazy stoners. They must've been doing indica all day. I don't know. But when I got to college and realized that, okay, the pharmaceuticals that they're now giving me because I broke my shoulder and lost my scholarship kind of changed my mindset from this driven athlete to this more holistic approach. I didn't want to take these painkillers that were going to make me just phase out and not be able to pay attention in college. I found cannabis at a very liberal university next to the Canadian border here in Washington State, and started using cannabis and just found it naturally. So I was more or less running away from big pharma. That's how I found cannabis, not really trying to get high or anything else. It was just an alternative to pharmaceuticals. And so in high school, it was all about the you know, the dumb jock and all of the stereotypes with that. And then in college, it was the stoner stereotype. I've been fighting stereotypes nonstop my whole life. And I've just kind of been this person to self-advocate. And so I just push and push on social media and I drive it down people's throats to the point where folks in high school who still think cannabis is this drug are, you know, following me on social media because they're just in awe of this once athlete now turned quote unquote stoner. And they're like, what is this guy doing? And so they're following me as I kind of stand on this pedestal to kind of keep pushing this thing. Like there's a lot of rhetoric, there's a lot of misinformation, and there's a lot of BS out there where it's not this lazy drug that people are using, but more of a holistic approach that as someone who uses it every day, all day long, I can still have in this interaction and conversation with people as I work in finance for my day job, I can still do this and use cannabinoids all day long.
And just to give the audience a little bit of background on myself, I'm currently the executive director of Normal of Michigan. I'm on the board of the Michigan Cannabis Caucus of the Democratic Party. I work with the Michigan Cannabis Freedom Coalition. I'm on the board of the Redemption Foundation and the John Sinclair Foundation. And I was very proud to co-host this year's Hash Bash celebration on April 2nd. But speaking of bash, let's talk about Washington, D.C., because I happen to know Morgan's broadcasting from the district. And Morgan, there looks like there's maybe a glimmer of hope for some legislation to come out positively during this particular session regarding cannabis, maybe?
There absolutely is. It's going to be a little bit tricky, but I think let's start with the low-hanging fruit. So the Senate, despite the fact that Senator Schumer has been kind of holding back any other incremental legislation until he introduces the Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act officially, let a research bill slide through that was sponsored by Senator Feinstein. And that one passed with unanimous consent after like 30 seconds of debate, which, I mean, is pretty amazing. Unfortunately, this bill doesn't nearly go as far as the House passed bill that passed a few days after that, that was sponsored by Representative Blumenauer primarily, that actually allows researchers to be able to access products that are available in regulated cannabis markets in the states. The Senate version does not allow for this. And, you know, unfortunately, we all know that the research quality cannabis that is coming out of or that is provided to federally approved researchers is garbage. And is, you know, half the time it's moldy. It's got like 2.3% THC. And there's it does not like relate to what consumers are actually putting in their bodies. And so it would be much, much better for the House passed version of this bill to be able to succeed in reconciliation. We're going to be working very heavily with members of the conference committee on that particular bill to make sure that the House version is the one that finally passes, or at least something closer to it, because the Senate version is really kind of useless. You know, it's a step in the right direction, and it's, I think, indicative of a changing mindset in the Senate that it passed with unanimous consent after so little debate. But researchers need to be able to access what people are actually consuming. Mm-hmm. And so if we can't get something along those lines, we're really not making that much forward progress. But, you know, politically, it's good that these passed like very quickly and unanimously. And it also just happened to be around the time when the House passed the MORE Act for the second time.
So what's the Senate's likelihood of passing the MORE Act? And I'd also like to say how disappointing it is that after a couple of years ago, when we got news that the University of Mississippi was no longer going to be the sole provider of cannabis for research in the United States of America, that promise really remains unfulfilled, Morgan. Isn't that correct to say that?
Yeah, I mean, there have been a few dispensations laid out by DEA and NIH in order to study cannabis and to produce it, but it's been a really slow process. I mean, people that have been banging their heads against this bureaucracy for years are still waiting. After, you know, in 2016, they said that they were going to start allowing for more licenses and for more allowances for production as well as for research, and we've just seen a trickle come through. In terms of the MORE Act, after it was passed by the House, which was amazing, and I think that the fact that it was pushed forward by House leadership with a lot of work from Speaker Pelosi and from the House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, and Barbara Lee and Earl Blumenauer and a lot of other people that were really stumping to get this across the finish line and to get an early vote. In terms of where it's going to be in the Senate, it has landed in the House Financial or the Senate Finance Committee. And Senator Wyden is the chair of that committee, and he's also the one of the co-sponsors of the CAOA, which has yet to be introduced. So Senate leadership is intent on seeing the Cannabis Administration Opportunity Act be the bill that moves. It took a lot of language from the MORE Act, which I think is great. But nobody has seen what the revised version looks like. And just recently they announced that they're not going to introduce it officially in April as was planned, because they're getting a lot of feedback from committee leads. We can't really have substantive conversations in the Senate about cannabis policy reform until we actually have a bill that we can talk about. And I mean, there are incremental bills that we can easily talk about, but Senate leadership does not want to talk about those bills until they introduce their baby bill.
You know, Morgan, we're running out of 2022. You know, every month that they decide not to introduce something, it, especially in a year when there are so many crucial elections in states across the United States of America, this is an issue that can get pushed under the rug. Josh, I know our time with Morgan here, we're coming up on our 4:20 break. I wanted to give you an opportunity to get in and talk to your friend, Morgan.
Well, but before we get into that, just one thing that I think is super important about the recent MORE Act vote is that this is the first time that the MORE Act has been voted on before the midterm elections and not in a lame duck. So for the first time ever, we have an opportunity to see exactly where members of Congress stand on cannabis policy reform before they head to the ballot. And that is going to be really, really useful. So anybody out there that is involved in electoral politics, particularly in states where your representatives voted against the MORE Act, it's time to bring them to task.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before we have what I anticipate being the lamest lame duck session in history after November, I'm curious how many anti-lobbyists are out there, Morgan, people that don't want this to happen. I mentioned last week on the show that I wasn't anticipating legalization or anything to move forward because of what just happened with Scott's. I think they have a lot more lobbyists than we do. And when you put $250 million into New York and four locations, you probably know more than I do. Morgan, what is your opinion between that dichotomy of partisan support and everyone saying yes, and then the money and maybe lobbyists actually saying, not today?
Well, to tell you the truth, we haven't really seen a whole lot of lobbying against comprehensive policy reform from people that just don't necessarily like the way that it looks. There might be a lot of lobbying to change the exact makeup of it. The people that do not want cannabis to be legalized at the federal level across the board, folks like Project Sam, they might not have a lot of money, but they have a lot of deep political connections. And so it's dangerous to write them off. Not only that, but I mean, you can just see from the hearings in these bills that the messaging that these groups are pushing and the false information about cannabis and about the effects of regulated cannabis systems in the states are something that a lot of lawmakers still latch onto. I mean, we had people in the MORE Act hearing a couple weeks ago still calling cannabis a gateway drug, or calling the efforts to undo the harms caused by prohibition as a handout to drug dealers, as opposed to restorative justice, which it really is. I mean, these talking points still click with a lot of lawmakers. And so it's really up to everybody that is involved in advocacy to reach out to their lawmakers and educate them about this stuff. And, you know, advocacy organizations can only do so much. Lawmakers really need to hear from their constituents.
Can I just say, I don't mean to say that it's lame, but it sounds really lame to call your senators or whatever. So for anyone else who feels the way I do when you hear that and you're like, that's lame, I'm never going to call them, go to someone like Normal or an Alliance, Cannabis Alliance equivalent, wherever you're at, and they have lobby days. It's really simple. Sign up and participate, because you will feel empowered when you do go to your Capitol and you do talk to whoever is within your district. They will hear you and they'll be like, oh, I didn't know about that. Or, you know, you give them your own perception or opinions. You can change their behavior in the way that they vote. You really can be an impact. So if you hear that and you're like, that's cliche, that's lame, do something about it. Like find an organization, sign up, go to lobby days, because you can make an impact.
Josh, you're absolutely right. And the only reason that lawmakers actually do anything is because they're getting heat. So if they're not getting heat from the people that are promoting our ideals and our policy preferences, they're not going to do anything about it. But, you know, in the lead up to the MORE Act, we were kind of on the fence a little bit, and we thought that we might actually lose because there were a bunch of even Democratic lawmakers that were worried about the effect that it would have on their midterm elections, or they were worried about like specific issues here and there. But Normal and Normal's allies in the Marijuana Justice Coalition, groups like DPA and so many others, put the screws to them. You know, we generated thousands of emails, thousands of phone calls to these offices, and that is what made them realize that this is a serious issue. It made them actually look into the issue, start to educate themselves about it, and vote the right way.
Morgan, I have to take us right at that time. We're at our 4:20 break. Thank you so much, Morgan Fox, from National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. What a wonderful 20 minutes you've given us.
Appreciate it, Morgan. Thanks, buddy.
Coming back with Alex Halperin, editor and publisher of Weed Week. Thank you for joining us. And welcome back to the Green Rush, the business of cannabis. We're a two-hour weekly live cannabis business talk show produced by Pro Cannabis Media. You're catching us every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern. We discuss news issues in the cannabis market, and we do a deep dive into specific topics of the industry. This week, I'm your host, Rick Thompson, along with Josh Kincaid. Welcome back, Josh.
Thanks, Rick.
We just had a great interview with Morgan Fox, who is the political director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. I'd like to thank all of our viewers on our PCM YouTube channel, and also everyone watching on procannabismedia.com. We're expecting Alex Halperin, who's the editor and publisher of Weed Week, to join us at any moment. Josh, Morgan, always a great interview, isn't he?
Yeah, it's interesting too, NCIA, because you always think of National Cannabis Institute Association as kind of being that main driver, and then yet hearing where he's at with Normal almost kind of sounded like he was more enthralled by that aspect of lobbying and the progress that he's getting more at the local level than the national level. And I would assume maybe at the local level, it feels like things are progressing more than that slow slog that is the national legalization movement.
Well, I can tell you with the National Cannabis Industry Association, there are so many divergent members that there are a lot of voices, each one demanding that their advocacy agents, you know, move their particular issue to the front of the pile. And I know that it's often impossible for someone like Morgan, who's been in DC for a long time, he knows. And sometimes that's difficult to make your clients understand. So with National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, I think our clients are a lot more, let's just say, laid back. So probably not pushing on Morgan quite as hard to receive advances in an industry that's very, very slow to move forward.
There's so many different avenues and venues, and there's bias, right? Like you were mentioning, like what are you going to get out of it? Whoever writes a bill has got some kind of dog ear on there that's going to benefit them specifically, kind of like Ohio wanted back in the day, five people only, Florida, limited license state, you know, you had $30 million or whatever. All of these initial bills are kind of laughable when you look at it in terms of how unfortunate they are and how biased and opinionated and tailored they are specifically to the benefit of just a very few, and kind of the opposite approach we should be taking, decriminalizing and structuring this, you know, and talking about more about social equity. You look at New York, and maybe that's political posturing where they want to have 50% for social equity applicants, you know, and those people come in and they'll sell out to Scotts for $250 million and whatever happens. But it feels good. And that's what you want, is you kind of want this feel good legalization movement with social equity to happen. But the reality is it's going to have a lot of opinions and small print in there.
Well, we have 50 different individual states, and I've often considered those 50 states individual crucibles of democracy, where they'll develop their own individual cannabis programs. And then when we're moving forward on a federal level, we can take best practices from all of those individual states, with social equity, we have an advantage in that each individual city that's involved in social equity has a chance to pass ordinances or to try programs that would advance social equity in their industry. The city of Detroit just authorized an adult use of cannabis business ordinance, which features heavily an advantage towards social equity applicants. It's possible that could be the new state, the new national standard. We had high hopes for Chicago, but it seems like Illinois is having a little bit of trouble working their program out. And you very much, Josh, were right to mention New York. That has a lot of promise when it comes to social equity. But the industry itself, we need to continue to experiment until we find out what's right. It seems illogical to think that we would come up with all these answers in just 2 or 3 years when these questions seem to be so complex, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish that there was a little bit more diversification. Even with a lot of the hospitality, marijuana lounge, cannabis cafe bills that I've been viewing, all of them, they're all very, very similar, unfortunately. When you kind of hope that people would take a more unique approach to it, it seems like maybe, you know, Colorado and Washington, when we went legal 10 years ago, everyone just kind of copied and pasted and then had their own petri dish experiment that they now have to work through, rather than somebody coming up with a more clear, transparent and easier way to make these things move faster. And some of them have. There's been states in the Northeast that don't have the 700 days that it took California, you know, I think it was more than three years that it took California to figure their stuff out. But they are coming at it quicker. I just wish that there was, I wish that was written more for the everyday person, just like a regular LLC. Once you put in these kind of limited licenses, if it was just opening up a regular business, it would be a lot more competitive. If they had the SBA type, you know, I'm not a fan of the SBA, but if there was a social equity opportunity for them to get in advance quicker, that would be better. There's just too much red tape. There's too much regulation. There's too many issues right now. And I'd rather have something, you know, like the banking industry has, where it's a self-regulatory organization. They have this SRO, the self-regulatory organization, in the middle. They write all of the bills to make it too complex for the senators to understand it. And then therefore it's written in their own bias. It's written for them and no one can question them because it's so complex. Their senators don't want to look stupid. House reps don't want to look dumb. And so they're like, yep, I guess that makes sense. Let's do that. And then the bankers get to run with it all day long. So why don't we set up an SRO? That's what the NACB tried to do. The National Association of Cannabis Business has tried to do that. They kind of got out of that for some reason. The NCIA won't lobby hard enough, and normal's too, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. We need something. And I believe an SRO could be that entity that could get us there, because I see it work with banks. Why can't we do it with cannabis?
Yeah, normal's more of a consumer organization. Those others that you mentioned are more business-based trade associations. And that's really perhaps what we need is to have the industry mature to the point where our trade associations compete on an equal level with some of those in the pharmaceutical or in the automotive industries or in the you know, natural resource industry, like mining or forestry or oil exploration. They certainly seem to have the lock on lobbyists. I thought it was very interesting when you asked Morgan a question about the anti-cannabis lobbyists in the Washington, D.C., because we continue to hear about those forces that would like to put their knee on the neck of the cannabis industry, including the alcohol industry and big pharma, and even sometimes the insurance industry as well. Josh, you've heard those stories, right?
Yeah, there's plenty. You know, there's newspapers still and oil and pharmaceutical and all of the traditional typical players that don't want to be in there. And what I was alluding to with the anti-lobbyists was within the cannabis industry itself. I think there's plenty of MSOs who don't want legalization yet. So I don't think they want to necessarily put the knee on the neck of the industry's advancements, but they definitely want to be holding the ankles so it can't crawl forward any faster.
When of course, when you open up state borders to interstate transfer of cannabis product itself, that really could upset a lot of individual state markets. And there are a lot of multi-state operators, those MSOs you mentioned, who really want to get their footprint established. If you look at Florida, we have one company that has 153 dispensaries in Florida. They've got a real lock on that state. And although in Michigan, we're a free market state, and I'm happy that we are. I can see from an MSO perspective where they would like to get that kind of a dominance of the market in other states before we open up the floodgates, so to speak.
Absolutely. That's going to keep all of their money where it's at because you're limiting the amount of new entrants. So there's a serious block in terms of your ability to get into New York. You don't have $250 million, forget about it. You don't have $25 million to get into Arizona, get out of here. Most people can't even get into Washington, and it's only made 100 or 200,000 for a license. I say only, but yet if there is this limitation towards interstate commerce, like if the feds deschedule it and then the MORE Act passes and there's only a framework for interstate commerce, but not the actual legalization, those MSOs get to play for years for first mover advantages while the other schmucks, mom and pops, just get annihilated. So they're like a Larry's Handy Mart in a world of 7-Elevens. They're never going to be have the same market cap, market share, profitability, or history that these companies, these corporations are going to have.
Well, that also talks about the viability of social equity businesses too, who by definition are not being allowed to be first to market. They're actually the ones who have the least market opportunity. Finally, social equity allows them to get licenses, but by that time, most of the good places, the good cities, the prime locations are already taken up, and now they have to struggle for market share in an industry where their competitors have had several years of marketing and a name recognition advancement before these social equity companies even break ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a huge disadvantage for anybody to try and compete at any point in time. And you give first mover advantages to somebody, and you know, without banking and without finance or whatever, it's an uphill battle no matter what. So I think there needs to be, you know, people coming together for nonprofits or co-ops and banding together rather than trying to do it themselves. There's all this ego and individualism in places like Washington and Oregon, where I'm from. I'm in Seattle, and I see it all up and down the West Coast of these people like, this is, I'm going to do this. And right now it's like, you're not. And it's going to be really hard if you keep trying. And so if we maybe band together and cooperate, there's an opportunity there. Outside of that, I think you're going to kind of still see folks in new emerging markets doing the same thing that we've been doing out here on the West Coast forever, which is trying to start from the ground up, failing miserably at it with your inefficiencies of having 18 people on a pre-roll machine, for example, thinking that this is Cuba, you know, in the 1800s, rolling cigars. That inefficiency, the lack of capital, the lack of automation, the lack of opportunities, all of this lack doesn't have to be there when we can kind of try to come together, collect our resources, have a co-op model, band together and produce something that is of substance that we want. I don't want the Budweiser equivalent. I also don't want to wait for the Phoenix to rise from the ashes. I don't want to wait for these mom and pops to produce something that I want with cultivars and quality that are consistently available. I want it now. I want that Americana. I want that Americanism and instant gratification. And we can't do that until we all come together and band together and have a co-op type cooperation against the big corporations. Otherwise, they're going to continue to run. And there's benefits to that. They're going to bring the price down. They're going to bring availability everywhere. But that's going to take a long time. And that's why I'm saying I don't have the patience to wait for that micro beer equivalent to bring in something that everybody wants. And I think there's opportunities to bring that in now. But people need to realize that it takes cooperation in order to make that happen.
Josh, thanks for that. I echo all your sentiments too.
With that, we're going to roll this one up. I'm Josh Kincaid. This is The Talking Hedge. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, or don't, and I'm out.
Don't forget to smash that like button on your way out and check out these other videos that we've got.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
I'm Larry Mishkin, and I'd like to invite you to join Rob Hunt and me on our weekly podcast, The Deadhead Cannabis Show. Each week, we explore the latest cannabis and jam band news and reminisce with other deadheads and jam band lovers about the great musical acts that we've seen and heard. Check out a new episode every Monday.